And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, October 5th, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 34. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
And I'm RJ.
Welcome to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228. 334-272-9228. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat as well as on Facebook. You can email us, everyone, at ingamechat.net. We are streaming the cam feed right now through Twitch TV. You can find us there as well as join in the chat room live while we broadcast. As you can tell, we are not playing League of Legends. And if you've listened to the show any amount of time, you probably get that joke. And if you don't, then it's a Twitch TV thing. So welcome to the show. Welcome to everybody in the chat room. Thanks for joining us for the live broadcast. We've got an interview coming up at in the second hour. The top of the second hour, we're going to be talking with Undead Labs about State of Decay. Got a lot of questions from Dennis and some from Cog that that we threw their way and got answered for you. And we'll be having that interview, like I said, at the top of the second hour. This hour, though, coming off the episode last week where we talked about the Steam's announcements and the Steam Machine, we got specs for the Steam Machine this week. Now, Steam... from what I understand, when we were doing last week's show, Valve made mention that these machines wouldn't be expensive, or at least would be on par with new consoles. Or maybe that was just the maybe it was the connection that we made was that to have anything comparable to the new generation of the consoles, you'd be spending just as much, if not more, to build your Steam machine.
I think first off, it is a mistake in any way to consider the new consoles when talking about the Steam machines. You can talk about the theoretical performance you're going to get out of the PS4 or the Xbox One, how much those systems are going to cost you, how much the new technology, the architecture inside of those boxes is likely to cost when something like it shows up to market. There was some guess that maybe Steam or one of the people who's going to be making the Steam machine for them, like one of these third-party partners that we think might be working with them, somebody would be using these SoCs, the system on a chip, this AMD architecture that looks so very hot, that's in the new consoles. It seems to be providing a decent amount of performance for very little power and low cost. There was the idea that maybe they would be using something like that. But regardless, the Steam Machine is not a console. It is not meant to compete directly with the consoles. There was some disagreement about that. Some people in the enthusiast community couldn't come to an agreement about what they thought the Steam Machine was actually going to do. Because, let's be clear, Valve does not communicate. They don't have to. They only say what is... Whatever is necessary to actually be clear about their intentions, they say approximately 10% of that, whatever it is. They communicated a bare minimum. They're doing everything they want to do on their own time. They're a privately held company. They don't have to report to anybody. They don't hold investor calls. It is like the, you know, a secret luxury cave for the Illuminati or something. There's no information that gets out of there, really. No genuine information, unless they want it to.
Right.
And even then, they're just like, meh, whatever. we're not interested in telling you all the details. Why would we? We'll tell you later. So there's still a bit of guesswork about what they're actually, like, what they're really on about. I think the SteamOS is very clear. I think their hardware is less clear. What they did tell us is that they, Valve personally, would be creating a prototype and a reference design. Or I think we... the community decided it would be a reference.
It's one of those things.
Which it may not be.
If this is for me, and it's only my opinion on this, it's only the way I look at things, is like if you're the guys that are making this, you're making your OS, you're making this, and then you build these prototype machines to run your OS and do what you want it to do, I kind of look at the way you've built it and say, I should follow that lead. You don't have to. I understand that.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, no.
But look at what they're really doing with their OS. Look at what the whole point of this is. The whole point is not to compete with consoles. The whole point is not to subsidize hardware out of a sense of duty or altruism so that everyone in the world just has something to play on. The point is not to drive you toward a closed system, right? It is not a closed system. There is nothing inside of the system that prevents you from getting out and operating elsewhere. This is not the iOS, the iPhone, or the Mac ecosystem. This is not the purported Microsoft closed ecosystem where they've, you know, theoretically in the future, we're all terrified of a world where only no unsigned code right. will run on Windows.
Right.
This is not that. The thing they are most concerned with is giving you every opportunity in along any kind of vector or area of comfort or desirability. They want to provide you with a way to play on Steam. Go to Steam, buy our stuff. We get a cut of stuff when you buy it from Steam. But that's okay because we're super popular, and even independent developers who sell things through their website and get 100% cut would often rather you go through Steam anyway.
Yeah.
Because of its accessibility, its manageability.
I've often hit up developers who have releases like that. I'll hit them on Twitter or whatever the case. I even emailed the guy who did Vessel, and I said, "Hey man, where can I buy this that puts the most money in your pocket?"
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "You can go either way, man. It's fine.
Right.
The money that I see from somebody that buys it on Steam is just a small comparison to the money that I would see if you bought it through my own website or through any other." Through any other method. The guy from Takedown, which has been patched, by the way. We still haven't played it yet to let
We wanted
know
to give it a fair shake. I didn't really want to play it and be upset about it. So
I know. So, but anyway, I asked them, I was like, which way is going to get you the most money? Should I go through Amazon? Should I go through Steam? Should I go through, you know, whatever? He's like, any way you want to is fine, so long as you get the game. They want more people. They want people playing their games. So they don't really care how you go.
When Gunpoint...
Right.
When that came out a few months ago,
mm-hmm.
I saw the link, followed it online. I went to the guy's website to buy it. It's a $10 game, right? Gets 100% or as close to that as is possible if you buy it through his website. I was there maybe 2 hours after the game released. He had such an enormous influx of customers that he had put another post at the top of his website. He was like, "Okay, look, thank you. Thank you so very much for buying it from my website. I get all that. However, the number of people who will come to my website to buy it pales in comparison to the number of people who will be made aware of it
if you buy it on Steam.
So if you came here to buy it from me, thank you very much. Please go buy it on Steam so that I can get into the top sellers."
Right, yeah.
And that is a goal in like the first day or two for a lot of these independent developers because it increases visibility. So the overall amount of money, the total income of being on Steam, even though they're going to take a higher cut, is much better for them. It proves, while again, not altruistic, it proves that Steam is very good for just about everyone involved. Yes, there are problems. Yes, there are growing pains. This is not the end point of Steam. Steam is a continuously evolving thing. But it has turned out to be quite good for a lot of people. Most of all, Valve. So the whole point, going back to the beginning of this, is to give people an opportunity to use Steam. You don't have to. You can do whatever you want. And they have made that point over and over and over. Neither the OS nor the hardware is going to be isolated or restricted to Steam OS. It's just simply about providing opportunities, providing a chance for that a particular person would rather play something this way and will have a secure future in which to do it without worrying about where the games market evolves in the future. They're covering several different bases at once, but theoretically, the Steam machine is just about, you know, it's ostensibly about taking over the living room, right?
Right.
This obscure PC gaming routine that a lot of people go through all the time or have been scared away from by its complexity. And its cost. This thing, which is kind of obscure and arcane in some ways, and a weird like desk oriented type of thing, devoid of apparently of comfort. Nobody wants to do that. Whatever. There's a lot of people who do, but people don't want to do that. So they want to go in the living room. They want to like Al Bundy on the couch, and play a video game. Steam sees that there's an awful lot of people and there's an awful lot of games that aren't being played in that environment. It's not about driving people towards some end. It's not about herding cattle. You know, it's not about driving you into a specific channel or a specific path. This initiative is about providing you every possible opportunity. it's hard to get one's head around because we're not used to that behavior from the industry. We're not used to people considering that profit might lie somewhere at the end of a bunch of indirect approaches. We're used to people like EA saying, nope, our games, off of Steam, onto Origin. You want them? You come here. That's heavy-handedness, ham-fistedness, direct, like, you know, whip-cracking type of approach. If you want it, if you want our stuff, you got to go to my store now. You have to come down this alleyway and turn into this storefront. Else, I don't know you. Steam doesn't exactly do that. And what they're really trying to do is say, if we create a lot of opportunities for a lot of people to play in a way they want to play, where they want to play, Windows, Mac, Linux, you know, or the SteamOS variant of Linux, living room, office, wherever you want to play, you can play. So the opportunity is very clear. That's what they're trying to provide. A box that looks good, performs well, sits in your living room, doesn't mess up your whole feng shui or what, like whatever your problem is with having a PC in the living room. And seeing what they've said about these machines, these very early specs for the prototype unit, looks like that's exactly what they're doing. So that one thing, that accessibility, that ability to stream or play natively, they've kind of answered that. When we talked about just the concept of having a machine for people who already own PC gaming hardware, and you can just kind of stream directly out of your Steam library to the living room.
Mm-hmm.
The machines they announced have nothing whatsoever to do with that, because what they announced surprised kind of a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because the notion was, if cost, right, look, if aesthetics were your problem, if running cables were your problem, if the simple act of turning a PC into a console-ish type of experience in the living room was your problem, I said it last week, I don't want to belabor the point, but there were already options. It was already doable. It's been doable for years. There are already hundreds of machines designed around a form factor to look good in your living room.
Mm-hmm.
They have not solved a problem there. But whatever, I'll leave that to the side. It's not the only thing they're after anyway. But the other one was cost. Right? The other thing, the other barrier to entry for PC gaming is cost.
Yeah.
And there's no way around that. It's a high-powered scene. Even if you can find someone to build it for you, or you can find a pre-built, a trustworthy OEM, you know, assembly of parts, it makes the Xbox One look a little more like a bargain. Or if not a bargain, then certainly affordable.
Yeah.
Right? You're talking like $600, $700, $800 for a competent machine ground up. From no case, no monitor, no mouse, no keyboard, all the way up to a basic enthusiast type of box. $600 to $800. Six, I actually think, is probably...
Yeah, building from scratch from one thing, $600 to $800. Then you got upgrading every year and a half or so?
Now, it's worth pointing out, you actually had a gaming PC, but it's been
four years. It's been 4 or 5 years.
In the past 5 to 7 years, that's actually really, really changed. The world we've lived in with hardware and gaming and PCs versus consoles, and now the whole industry has developed. There are PCs that were top-notch 5 years ago that are still kind of playing games all right today, because the pace of PC component technology, the development of that technology, has been very, very slow. It's been glacial. There hasn't been any reason to go through that 18-month to 24-month upgrade cycle that you had in the late 90s, early 2000s. That's not there anymore. That is about to change. We'll get to that soon enough. but it is about to change, and we're about to, like, I think people who are PC gaming enthusiasts are actually sort of waking up with this kind of system shock feeling. They're like, oh, it's time again. It's really, really time to watch something ring my system out and make it work for its, you know, entertainment. But specifically going back to what these Steam machines are doing, I think it's important to recognize that cost is still a prohibiting factor for a lot of people. It doesn't matter which room you want to play in, living room, office, bathroom, the attic. I don't care. Cost is still cost.
Yeah.
And when they announced the specs for their prototype level of steam machine, I think a lot of people were shocked. I was too. Not because I didn't think they would ever offer that, but I can't exactly figure out, not quite, who it's for. The people I think that machine is for is a very narrow market. Do you have the specs pulled up? Because it was a little bit strange.
You want to start at the low end and move up?
Yeah, at the low end, we're looking, and they didn't say, there's no specific spec. They just said, here's the types of hardware you can expect, and there's a range.
Right, yeah.
So the low end is what?
Well, we'll start with the CPU. It's an i3.
It's an i3, which is, I think, still a dual core. I don't know which generation of i3, probably the most recent, but it's a dual core processor, which isn't great for high-end gaming, and a GTX 660.
A 660, exactly.
Which is a mid-range NVIDIA card, $200, I think. The i3, I think, can be had for about $100.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice entry-level thing, although I don't think the i3 going forward in the next handful of years is going to be a chip of choice at all. But that's about $300 right there. That's your low-end machine. They have a hybrid solid-state and platter drive, terabyte drive. Other commodity parts. This is all off-the-shelf components inside of a custom enclosure that's actually strangely a little bit smaller than the Xbox One. I don't know if you looked at the dimensions.
I didn't look at the Xbox. I see the dimensions. I didn't know what the dimensions of the Xbox One.
They're just a little bit bigger than this box. Mm. It's like, what is this, like 12 by 12, 12 and a half by 12 and a half by 3 or something like that.
Yeah.
Typical cable box sized thing, which is very good. It's going to fit in your entertainment center. It's going to be great. But even that low-end machine is probably $600 worth of parts. I can't say for sure. I don't know exactly. I don't know what kind of deals they have or how much of a break they're getting buying in bulk or which versions specifically they're getting. But it's going to land somewhere in the $500 to $600 range, and that is your low-end machine. On the high end, these guys are putting i7s and a Titan.
That's Titan. That's $1,000
for
NVIDIA's, the card alone.
That's it's a $1,000 card on the market. I'm not upset at them for doing this.
No.
They haven't turned it into, I mean, it's still modular. They tell you you can do whatever you want with it. You can tear the Titan out and put it in another machine. You can take your old bagged out video card and put it in this. You can even swap the motherboard if you want to. We don't care. We're even releasing the CAD design specs of our enclosure if you want to muck about with that.
Right.
That's all great. But there's nothing here that hasn't already been done. And if I've got the scratch to buy a Titan, why would I buy a Valve box? I don't know. I don't understand it. If I've got that kind of income profile, if I've got that kind of money, and if I'm the kind of person that cares that much about performance, I feel like I'm just going to build it myself, you know? Or if you've got that kind of money, then you've already had the money to buy an enthusiast machine. What I see in these specific specs are a power user and enthusiast level gaming machine that is just kind of preassembled and looks good in your living room, I guess. It's just that those things have been available already. I'm not saying this is bad. This is just for people who wouldn't want to build their own, but I see absolutely no benefit to buying this instead of building my own. I would never buy this, ever. There is still an assumption that they're somehow going to give this thing to people at a lower price than what it actually costs, which I can't understand the foundation for that opinion, because it's not a locked ecosystem. There's no way they're going to subsidize this hardware, because they would sell you the hardware. You could strip SteamOS off of it, pull the hardware apart, and then piece it out on eBay. They're basically just giving you money with no guarantee of return. PS4 is being sold at a loss by Sony.
Mm-hmm.
They've admitted it. We know it. But it's fine. It makes perfect sense. Every single PS4 game you buy, whether it's off the digital store or whether it's on a disc, they get a cut. They get a piece of all the action. Everything that you're going to play on that system, they get a cut. So it's worth it to them, because the system is essentially useless if you don't pay into their system. This doesn't make any sense in that regard. So the idea that they're going to subsidize hardware doesn't really make any sense. That's just charity. And I don't think that's what they're after here.
Calgar asked in the chat room, is this just another OEM but with Linux?
Maybe, but it doesn't seem so stripped down as an OEM.
Right.
They're saying it's completely off-the-shelf parts, which doesn't mean it isn't OEM, but it doesn't look like they've taken any of the shortcuts that an OEM often does. It looks too modular for that, and they seem to be too interested in the hackability and the modularity of this thing. I don't... Again, I'm not upset about it. I am certainly not the market for it. What I'm confused about is what they hope to learn. They're shipping 300 of these things to people as part of a beta test, as part of a to test an idea, to test something. If they just wanted to test SteamOS, that's easy. Distribute SteamOS. They're going to be doing that later anyway.
They're going to be doing that too.
That's much more, and again, that's more interesting. But you don't need this machine to do that. If you want to test the streaming capabilities of a low-power box pulling games directly from your Steam installation, you don't need this. Like, that's not what this box is for. So that's another key element of their initiative that they're not testing here, apparently. So what are you testing? How well things run on a Titan? I can't figure out what it is they hope to learn. That's what I'm confused about. I don't know what they're getting
out
of
it. You had said that before in when we were talking on G-Chat and then in here when you were like, I can't make sense of that. And I never really asked you what it was you couldn't make sense of.
Yeah.
Until now, I was like, what is that testing?
Right.
What is, you know?
All right. In the chat room, Nabokov is saying they're testing the controller. Testing the controller UI usability. The usability of the system is right out. It's a PC. The usability of PCs has been handled, I would say, quite thoroughly over the last 20 years. But what? I mean, I'm joking, but whatever.
Right.
I don't see, quite honestly, again, since the Steam machine is nothing but a PC, it is not specialized hardware in any way, shape, or form. They said that. Off-the-shelf parts in a special enclosure. If you want to test the controller, ship the controller. I can test it on a regular PC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not upset at them. I don't hate anybody in the world that thinks this is super awesome. I
just trying to figure out their plan.
I don't even want to stream things off of my box, off of my normal computer, onto my TV. This isn't something for me, but it's still more interesting than shipping out 300 PCs somewhere, you know, in the spec list from low middle range all the way up to massive high end. I don't get it.
Nabokov kind of amended that. Usability of an OS with only a controller.
I do understand that because one of the requirements to sign up for the beta is launching in big picture mode using a controller. I can do it on my computer. There's nothing... I don't mean to argue the point. I don't want to feel like I'm arguing any position. I don't have a position.
Right.
I am very interested in everything they're doing. I'm just at a point where I'm like, what are you doing? This isn't even interesting. Shipping somebody an i7 with a Titan and saying, plug it into your TV and use this controller on it. Oh, wait, part of our process is that you can do whatever you want. So don't do that if you don't want.
And the usability of the OS with only a controller. The controller is, as we've talked about, mimicking mouse movement, at least with the thumb tracking.
In some functions, yeah. I don't want to speak too much about it because it's obviously, you know, fancy.
Navid says, it's publicity. Well,
yes, well, there you go. You know what? There you go. I think that is the most honest thing to say about it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But, you know, I mean, all you're really doing is getting a golden Willy Wonka ticket here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there's anything in this that you can necessarily... That's going to provide them with any kind of information.
And even the low end, sure, but even those the middle and the upper middle and then the high end, you're getting a really good system out of it, too.
I think more people were actually interested in what Valve was going to do or what they were going to allow OEMs to do at the very low end of the computer scale, right? At the sub 660 and sub i3 range to create, maybe not sub i3, but definitely in the below $500 cost area so that people who say, I can't really afford a PC, but man, there's a lot of cool stuff on PC, like tons and tons of indies.
Yeah.
Tons and tons of older and low I don't say low performance, but older games that don't require nearly as much PC performance. There's a huge backlog, thousands of great things on Steam that don't require AAA hardware for AAA games. And you do not need a 660 and an i3 to play those things. So there were a lot of people suspecting, like, that's where you're aiming at. Get people who want to play PC games that can't be played on the consoles and never have been played on the consoles and play in the living room.
Yeah.
Nothing but question marks for me. So,
and hopefully we'll find out more about that. But we got to go to a break. When we come back, we will talk about those that feeling of, hey, it's time to...
PC upgrade whiplash.
Time to upgrade ourselves. But yeah, we'll talk more about that. Coming up next on In-Game Chat, we will be right back. Welcome back to In-Game Chat. Moving into, you know, we were talking about PC specs and how the PC guys are looking at some changes with some games being released that might require some upgrades, which is great because it's always fun to be able to see these things perform at their peak. When it's something that you're really interested in and that sort of thing, I mean, you know, we got specs for, what, Battlefield 4? Which, that was bad. That was music from Bad Company. Battlefield 4, and we got specs from Watch Dogs.
System requirements.
System requirements, exactly. Yeah. I say specs, I meant system requirements, if you're running them on a PC. Watch Dogs, of course, and Battlefield 4, both available on the consoles. Mm-hmm. Watch Dogs on everything, your current systems and your next gens. Battlefield,
on
just
pretty much everything.
Everything as well. Yeah. I wasn't sure. I knew it was next gens, but I wasn't sure about current gens. But you're right, because they've got that whole upgrade pricing thing available to you. Which, something, just, I know we get sidetracked all the time.
That's fine.
That's great that you can, if you want to do that, you don't want to wait until the new systems come out and you want to go ahead and start playing the games. But it seems pointless to want to do the upgrade since your save will not transfer. As far as we know, your save is not going to transfer.
You mean your save game for the single player?
Yeah.
Nobody cares about that. It's Battlefield.
Well, I'm thinking of Assassin's Creed, and I'm thinking of... nobody cares about Assassin's Creed. Yeah, but I'm talking about Assassin's Creed and Watch Dogs in a sense that you'll be able to upgrade. I understand Battlefield 4 kind of doesn't sit in that because you're focused on multiplayer.
It's a multiplayer thing. Really, you're only worried about character progression.
Yeah. But in your single player games, your save is not going to transfer, so I don't necessarily understand the point in doing that. But anyway,
instant gratification,
yeah,
give you a reason to justify it to yourself.
I suppose so.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but anyway, we got the system requirements for these two games. I'm looking at Watch Dogs right now, but what was Battlefield?
I don't even remember what theirs were. The first most interesting part, and the game isn't out yet. It's not out till the end of this month, October, but The beta was available, and the Battlefield betas are usually, they shouldn't really be taken too seriously as a representation of gameplay, or, you know, as a representation of what the full map rotation is going to look like. It's one map, usually one game mode. It's usually a nightmare in terms of performance because it's unoptimized code. Usually it's some version of the game that is from a previous stable build, maybe a month to 6 weeks old.
Yeah.
The Battlefield 3 beta was the same way. A lot of people said that they didn't like it. It didn't perform well. It was a whole bunch of garbage. But when the final game comes out, it's usually much better optimized and things are better off. But people can't help but, you know, get in and try to make some decisions and find some understanding about what this game's really about. The interesting thing about the Battlefield 4 beta on PC, out of all the other system requirements, is that it requires 64-bit OS.
That's right. That was the thing.
It is a 64-bit only executable. I know that this is very PC-centric and, you know, apologies to any of the people who don't follow this stuff, but it's something that a lot of us, a lot of people in the enthusiast community who are pretty much PC-only or PC-primary gamers have been very, very happy about the new consoles coming out. Because, not because they're more powerful than PCs, for the first time, they're less.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us are, I mean, I'm on the fence about even paying off my PS4 pre-order at this point. I have no problems with it. I'm in love with the system. I think it's adorable.
Yeah, if we got more time, we'll go into that. Because right, I've got my issues too, but you already know.
But at this point, I'm like, I don't know, man. That's money I'd rather put back into my PC at this point. But one of the things that we thought when we first saw the specs and first heard about why these systems were doing what they were doing was more RAM means that these systems can now keep up with the design concepts we've always liked on PC. Open worlds, large environments, less loading, all of the things that used to be the defining point of a PC. PC gaming, just taking advantage of all the hardware that's there, making the game as good as it possibly can be. Now they can do that. More importantly, these are 64-bit machines, which means they can address larger portions of memory, larger portions of RAM. Now you're not limited by this very small, less than 4 gigs of RAM that a thing can use. The game client itself can actually eat up quite a bit of RAM, which means you can put those large environments in. You can load less. You know, your initial loading time might be more, but you can have a more freeform, open environment with much bigger textures. And it's something that PC gamers have wanted for a long time because we've had this hardware. We've had these capabilities, but the software wasn't taking advantage of it, because why bother? The consoles are the lowest common denominator. We're just going to build to that and you guys can get by. And that's what we've been doing for years. So to see these things start coming out, and in the span of just a couple of weeks, Battlefield 4 beta, boom, 64-bit only. Watch Dogs specs for the PC, 64-bit only.
Yeah, and those are two different studios. It's
two completely different studios. And yeah, it's worth pointing out that DICE is releasing, the guys who make Battlefield,
right,
they are releasing a 32-bit, like an older client for Windows as well, but the beta's not testing it. The fact that there's a 64-bit client available at all tells us an awful lot about where we can expect the future of all gaming, but PC gaming in particular, to go. And those Watch Dogs specs are the first thing in forever that made a bunch of PC gamers look at their rigs and think, man, like, I have been very lazy. I have been getting by on suboptimal specs for a really long time. The difference between a mid-range machine and a high-range machine on 99% of PC games has been negligible.
Yeah.
It's been nothing. There's been no point. There's been no point to spend the extra money and, like, really hardcore tune your machine. There's people out there with unlocked CPUs and really great video cards who've never bothered overclocking them, which is, once upon a time, would have been blasphemous. And it still kind of is if you're an enthusiast or a tuner or something like that. But now it looks like those of us that have always chased the best possible performance and the best possible graphics on PC, we're going to have something to work for again. And that hasn't been true in a really long time.
Yeah. And it makes me a little bit hopeful for Watch Dogs, at least, considering what we originally saw of this game the very first time.
When the reveal came out, that was some seriously next-gen fidelity. It was really, really good. Everything we've seen since then that we know has been running on a console hasn't really looked terribly special.
It never looked like it did the first time we saw it.
And so there's at least a hope.
To see what their ultra specifications are, it's like, well, then maybe we will see what they were trying to show.
Right, they're recommending... I mean, recommended used to just be like, I don't know, like a toaster or something. Like, whatever. Like, I don't know. If it's in your computer, it's fine.
Yeah.
Now, their specs for the better performance or the better image quality and everything in that game is like, no, you need to have like an 8-core processor.
Yeah, for recommended 8-core.
Or hyper-threading or something.
8-core for the processor and 8 gigs of RAM for the memory there. And your processor should have at least 2 gigs. Not your processor, your graphics card. Should have 2 gigs of video RAM. That's for the recommended. And they give some examples, which I'm glad they did. And then for the ultra specifications, same thing with the graphics card. The latest DirectX 11 graphics card with 2 gigs of video RAM or more. Yours has 3, I believe.
Mine does have 3.
Yeah. I think mine only has 2. The CPU needs to be the latest 8-core or more.
It's worth pointing out that they're a little bit, they're not specific enough in certain areas, and they're wrongly specific in others. They're comparing, Intel doesn't have like a real true 8-core consumer piece right now. They don't. But I don't, it's fine. I have a quad core. I have an i5 2500K for anybody that actually knows what that is. And it's, you know, it's overclocked, so don't worry. I'm not that guy. It's not going to have any problem with this game. It's going to absolutely thrash this game. It's going to be fine. But what they're talking about is a game that knows what to do with multiple cores. It's aware of 8-core processors and multi-threaded, hyper-threaded CPUs. You're finally going to see some benefit out of these things that you may have bought just for, you know, encoding video or something like that. Your gaming is finally going to benefit from the most your hardware has to offer. I know that may seem overblown, but it's a big deal. And it's not just a big deal to PC gamers. I know that there's a lot of kind of weird enthusiasm for all of this stuff, that you can hear it in my voice, and it's really, really neat. And PC people kind of get off on this sort of thing, but it actually means a lot of good things for consoles as well. It means that the baseline, and they've always been a terrible, reprehensible baseline, or at least for the past number of years, that's no longer true. We're all going to be operating at a place that's much closer to one another, and that's good for everyone.
I don't like the
metaphor all that much, but in this case, a high tide most definitely lifts all boats. So I think it's good news for everyone. And when you see PC gamers jumping around and getting excited about these things, you know, there's going to be a lot of combative EPIN style stuff going on over the next few years, but that's actually quite good for the development of hardware and ultimately the development of games. It really is going to be good for everybody. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm excited about it. I'm very much excited about it. Maybe not so much for Battlefield 4. I've never been a Battlefield kind of guy, but I'm excited that that's kind of opening that door to hopefully what we're going to see with future releases. Because this will kind of go into that other conversation that you and I had on the way in. I'll be getting a PlayStation 4, and I'll be getting an Xbox One at the time that they launch.
Right.
What I can't figure out is what game I'm going to be playing on those.
Right.
I'm getting one at launch just because it's always been in me to be that guy that has that stuff.
No, it's fine. I do understand it. And they both look as all the words that have been said about the Xbox One, it's still going to probably be a system worth owning. I don't think it compares well to the 4, but if you at least look at it in isolation and the possible exclusives downstream, I think it's going to be okay, right?
Yeah.
And certainly, look, you got to buy both of them. Wonderful. We'll have both of them to look at and compare. And you'll certainly know how the two of them compare directly.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I'm going to be getting them. It's just like I said, I don't know the games that I'm going to be getting on them. There are, sadly, no exclusives on either system at launch that I am interested in playing. There are a few here and there of like little things, like Twisted Pixels game will be released on the Xbox Live Arcade, and that's the only place you can buy it, but that's not a game I'm going to be able to buy retail in store.
Right.
The PS4 may have some of those titles as well that are, you know, just PSN-only type downloads or whatever the case may be, that I can only get them there. So there's that. But as far as like a retail item, I can play Watch Dogs on my PC. I can play Assassin's Creed 4 on my PC.
Yep.
A little bit later than usual, as usual.
Not enough later to justify the cost of a console, if that's what we're doing.
Right.
But if you want to, if you're talking about a trade-off being,
I'm just saying
how good it looks on the PC, where would I rather do this? Maybe Assassin's Creed I can see going with one of the next-gen consoles instead of the PC. Not Watch Dogs. Watch Dogs, I'm going to hold out hope that this thing actually means to perform, and to perform as well as possible. It's always up in the air with Ubisoft. But that I'm going to get anything like the IQ, the image quality, that we saw in that first announcement.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold out hope that that's actually possible on the PC.
Me too. But
even looking past that, well, before that, Battlefield? I'm not playing that on the consoles. I'm playing that on my PC. And I will play it, and I am going to, again, knowing past performance, I think that the PC version is going to come out and be perfectly fine. I think the beta is rough and people maybe give it a chance if they're at all interested and hope that the release is better off. But certainly going to play that on PC. I really want to play Titanfall. And, you know, that's coming on PC.
PC. The one that we were talking about that we're kind of up in the air in at the moment is Destiny.
Right, and Destiny, Infamous Second Son, all of these things are kind of driving me toward wanting a PS4. But again, if Bungie comes along and announces Destiny for the PC, now what? Now name me one thing in the next calendar year that's enough to justify spending the money on a console when I could just take that and reinvest in my PC.
And so I don't see anything that I'm going to be interested in anytime soon that would make me want to pick up a game with these systems, I guess. Right. I'm getting the system to pick up a game for those. There's games I'm going to rent just to look at and try out. I'm not a big drive guy, or at least big sim racer type guy. Yeah. So Drive Club and Forza don't interest me near as much as any of the other titles that are being released. Like you said, Infamous, Witcher 3, PC, that's where I'm going to be playing that. And I'm trying to think of any others in my head at the moment that are going to be released in the spring next year,
right?
Early next year, that'll be on the new systems that I cannot play on the PC.
And there are
Microsoft seriously has some lacking exclusives.
There are some things that people are interested. Look, I'm sure there are people who want to play Rise. That's fine. I'm not even here to say anything about those games. And Killzone looks fantastic. I want to see Killzone, but I don't have a major urge to own it and the system. You know that the exclusives are there, but they are minimal. And again, because the architecture works so well for all systems, there is almost no reason to keep any of these things exclusive to any one platform, except for I got to have my money.
Yeah.
As a company, Sony's got to have theirs. Microsoft's got to have theirs. And we can deal with that. We actually can deal with that now, because I like to believe that timed exclusivity, natural timed exclusivity, is something that's going to be more common. So
more than likely it will
be. But it looks, and if you're not a PC gamer, absolutely, without a doubt, they both look like a good buy. But if you are, I don't know, you know? Maybe if you've got a top-of-the-line machine right now, maybe if you've got enough money, plenty of money, it's all fine. But for a lot of us looking at it, thinking that that's $400 to $500 that I could just reinvest back in my other system, and I'm missing out on what in the first year? Not a lot if Destiny is announced for the PC. And if it isn't, that's a big driver for me. That's a really, really huge driver for me.
Yeah. What will also be interesting to see is if the PC sale prices kind of match the console sale prices digitally, anyway. Whenever they go on sale or have those sales that are 3 months down the line,
how they behave.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we know how the digital space behaves on the PC. There's no reason to believe at all that that's going to change.
Yeah, that's very true. I'm looking at one of the last things that I'll likely play on my current gen systems comes out this week, which is Beyond Two Souls.
Which is Beyond, yeah.
Yeah. I play that in GTA 5, which I should say I'm done with that.
Yeah.
I finished it. I tried to play online, had some connection issues. I finally did get connected, and I didn't like what they did, which is randomly throw you into you're forced into a mission randomly with other people, pickup group.
Mm-hmm.
You have to finish that mission, then you're forced into another mission randomly. I completed that mission solo, and right as I was getting the results from that mission, it started the mission completely over with and put somebody with me, and we ran through it again, or I had to run through it again with somebody else. It has its problems, but what it doesn't have is its hook to keep me playing the online portion. I keep reading about everybody on COG who's on the 360 side of things having a great time, and I'm tempted to go rent that and play the online portion, but it's just not going to be there for me. So I finished the game. The game has three endings. I'm not going to spoil anything for you. I just don't like how they handled that. Maybe we'll get into some spoiler conversation at some point later down the line to talk about why that is. But I just didn't like how the three endings played out. You were given choices, but those choices were limited. And the character that they decided you make that choice with, I don't know. The open world just seemed very linear all of a sudden with what they were doing. But enough of that. So I finished GTA. Could only play that on the consoles. Finished Beyond Two Souls comes out. Can only play that on the PS3. Once that's done, I see nothing left that I can't play on the PC that I would be playing on my home consoles. About the only thing would be Batman, Arkham Origins. That's and that I can play on the PC until the next gen stuff releases, because it's not being released on the next gen systems.
Batman, okay.
From what
I
understand,
there are a couple of things. I mean, there's the possibility of the third game in the Final Fantasy 13 thing that's only going to be on the PS3. The next Gran Turismo.
That's true. Know. Yeah, December.
I mean, for,
you, yeah.
For some people, and that's fine. The PS3 has this nice, lovely little tail of games to go out on. Right now, I'm chewing through Halo 4 just to kind of get it done, and it's fine, and I'm enjoying it as a Halo thing, I suppose. But that's it. Like, I'm just kind of saying goodbye to at least the games portion of my relationship with it.
Yeah.
And I've got a handful of digital titles on the Xbox that I don't think I ever quite finished off, maybe. But, yeah, I'm essentially saying goodbye to it. And I'm not even moving on to the next consoles. I'm just moving on to what is very clearly, for everyone, a new era, hopefully. I mean, I don't want that to sound too grandiose, but changes are afoot, man, and they're all good. They're good for everybody. So,
yeah, reminded Calgar apparently of Batman. I have an issue with Batman. I have a dilemma, I suppose. One that can't be solved with patience, but if you know me,
yeah.
I'm not that patient. Game releases in October. There has been
when?
October 25th?
Oh, come on. Man,
I'd have to go look.
Come on, this Battlefield.
I know it's late October.
I can't do this.
Releases in October. It has a wealth of DLC if you pre-order from here, if you order the season pass, or if you get this. It has a wealth of things that I know are going to cost me the same amount of the game right now, but with all of it included, 6 months down the line. Or even less than that when they do the Game of the Year edition or something like that. I understand how this is going to work out. I'm really tempted to go ahead and get it, though. I have an issue with games that have a seasonal aspect to them.
Okay.
One of the favorite things is especially all the Batman games that have been released so far usually take place when it's very cold. And the game's released during a season when it's very cold, and I really like how that sort of matches up together.
The Batman games always sort of fit the fall,
early
winter.
They really, and I've always enjoyed games that release during the fall and have that sort of fall aspect to them, and have a seasonal aspect. It makes you feel like you're in that moment. And this one, Batman, takes place Christmas Eve, and so it's always fun to have those games around whenever that's going on. And so I'm like, I really want to play it, and it's also Batman, and I've enjoyed it, but it just seems like I should wait. It's something I should wait. Feels like I should wait on that.
Yeah. Okay. Tell yourself that.
I know.
And see what you're doing. And see what you're doing in another 2 weeks.
I know. What I'm going to be doing in a few weeks is hitting up Warner Brothers. I get a PC copy of that there. I want to talk about it on the show. Would you mind handing that over and see what happens? But we'll see. But yeah, it's something that I'd really like to play, and something that I also think, if I was good with money, I would wait. But here's a guy who's about to pick up $1,000 of consoles without a game to play on it. So there goes that reasoning and logic. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk with Undead Labs about State of Decay. We got that interview. We had that interview on Friday. We're going to play it for you here at the top of the next hour, and we will be back with more of In-Game Chat right after this. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. On the line with us right now, it is Sonya Weathers from Undead Labs, here to talk to us about State of Decay. Hello, Sonya.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful to have you. Saw you guys at PAX a couple of weekends back, and you were not on the show floor so much. You were out there. You were outside of the floor-type area.
We were behind the escalators, and let me tell you, we loved it so much, we're going to do it again. You could hear yourself talk. You could actually talk to the community, which was the whole reason we were there, was to meet our players and thank them for their support and show them what the PC version looked like. But we had tons of room to spread out. We weren't getting yelled at or jostled or competing with sound systems. We were able to pour all of our money into buying stuff for our players instead of, you know, graphics and displays. It was fantastic. So yeah, I'm glad you found us. Look for us there again.
Well, I found you because we got two guys on the show who are huge fans of State of Decay, and honestly, were it not for them, I really wouldn't have picked up on the game until the announcement of the Steam release, or just ran into you at PAX.
That's the way it is with our community. Our game has been strictly word of mouth. Every player we have comes from another player. So you're doing it right.
Well, they've been doing it right, and they're really looking forward to the Steam release on this, or the PC release, I suppose. But I mean, it's going to be released on Steam, correct?
It is actually on Steam right now, early access. Mm-hmm. If you have a game controller, you can rock State of Decay on a PC right now. And to be fair, we are not currently supporting the keyboard interface that exists because it's not an interface. It's the defaults that came with the engine. But our PC guys, our early access players, are the kind of people who will peck at every key on the keyboard until they figure out what does what. We're thrilled. That's the perfect early access person, you know?
Yeah.
But it's also a little glitchy and a little awkward. But we've got a programmer burning up his keys right now, creating the interface. So that should be up within days. You know, so if you want to give early access a try, hit it now.
That's one of the questions that we've got here. I will say it's Dennis and James are the two guys on our show who have been playing State of Decay and can talk about it. But Dennis sent in these questions. Have the Steam Early Access sales been going well?
Oh, very. We are. Oh, wow. It's so bear in mind, the text on the Steam page is me practically begging people not to buy it. It's early access isn't for everyone. You know, there are bugs. There's frustrations. We've got a ratio issue right now that is incredibly obnoxious. I don't think you should play early access unless you're really willing to be patient with that. And I wanted to let everyone know, hey, no harm, no foul if you don't want to buy it. Well, it's still, we're working out the kinks. And yet we've still had like something like 80,000 people buy it.
It's so tempting.
Yeah, I'm glad.
It's right there. It's so tempting. And you have other people playing it, and it's like, I don't want to get in there.
Did you see your friends' names pop up with it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's tough. But at the same time, I am a old school PC player. I can't, at PAX, if you walked up at the wrong moment when the guys, you know all those buttons people were trading at the show? All of my guys ran off to go get buttons and left me alone with the controller. And I was like, but guys, I can't make this go. I can't make it go. And they said, no, you'll be fine. And a zombie walks up to me and I'm like, okay, on a keyboard, I know how to equip a weapon, but what do you do with this thing? And so they came back, and I was sitting there trying to punch a zombie to death. It was just humiliating.
How many people at Undead Labs?
We started with 22. I think we're up to 26.
Okay,
we're a very small team.
Yes. We've had a lot of experience talking to small teams. Oddly enough, that have grown into larger teams, and I see that possibly happening with you guys here in the future as well. So. But anyway, Undead Labs, makers of State of Decay, this is your first title?
This is our first title as a studio, but bear in mind, we are all, this is not a bunch of new folks. This is, our founder went into this in part to create not just a dream game, but a dream studio that creates, I mean, it on the website it says cultural phenomenon, because you got to have a big goal to shoot for, you know. But mainly we're a bunch of people that want to make cool stuff. And we've all made stuff before. Jeff himself, the founder, was one of the, I think he was the original lead designer on World of Warcraft. He and some friends split off and formed ArenaNet, which made Guild Wars. Mm-hmm. They sold NCSoft, and here he is and here we are. I mean, the original core group of people had been together for quite some time, and we've got people that did God of War. We've got all kinds of people who've been around the block a few times. So this is our first game as a collective, but I don't think there's anyone at the company with less than 10 years of experience, real experience, not, you know, 10 years counting playing games.
Yeah. And how did the concept of State of Decay, how did that all come about? What is the history of the game?
The history is sometime in the 90s, a couple of guys walked up to Jeff and said, you know what would be really cool? We should make an open world zombie apocalypse simulator. It'd be awesome.
This was in the 90s?
Yeah. Wow. The technology wasn't there to do as it is. We pushed the Xbox to its absolute limits. I mean, the things that were done to that poor engine, you know, it can't be undone. The technology just wasn't there 15 years ago to do this game. And, you know, also creatively, in terms of how much creative control you could exercise, nobody had enough experience to be able to say, hey, trust us on this. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, the nice thing is that Microsoft was trusted us from the beginning. Here we have a game, persistent world, you know, time passes when you're offline. Permadeath, if a character dies, there's no coming back. There's a real-time strategy game with the base building and really, you know, picky morale management kinds of things. This is not a guaranteed sell. We didn't expect it to be as successful as it was. But Microsoft never blinked because they trusted us to be able to deliver something cool. So we wouldn't have had that 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you hear different stories coming out of people who have worked with Microsoft. Some good and some bad. So it's nice that you guys had a good experience, and it's grown.
Any big company is going to have, and can I call you dude? I'm sorry.
Sure. I don't care.
I'm a little punchy at the moment.
No, it's fine.
We just announced that we had hit the 1 million sales mark. And so I've spent the morning like frantically sending emails and tweeting and following up and all kinds of stuff. So you're hitting me when I'm at the, you know, if you ask me something that I shouldn't answer, now is the time. I'm just saying.
Oh, wonderful.
The thing with a big company is that it's never this monolithic, you know, singularity. It's a company as big as Microsoft is made up of a lot of people. There's a lot of people with different goals and different levels of ambition and different interests. We happen to have a good team that has been supporting us from the get-go. I can't speak to anyone else's experience because mm-hmm. it all depends on who you wind up partnered with.
It is. I mean, we've gotten the same answer before is that, you know, well, not the same answer, but the answer that some companies have had no problems because we'll say, hey, we talked to so-and-so and they were like, they had this problem with the way that Xbox Live Arcade was dealt with and their game and everything else. And they'll say, well, we didn't run into that. We didn't have any. So it just, it varies. It's case by case.
We certainly got lucky with the people that we've been partnered with. So
yeah,
they've had our backs. So,
well, since I've got you on the ask questions that you normally wouldn't answer, working with Steam, and it being recently announced about their Steam OS and the Steam Machine, have you guys had any hands-on time with that controller?
No. Not at all.
Okay.
I can't speak to Microsoft and us right now, but in the past, in my experience, if you're working with a brand new, if you're going to be developing with a brand new technology, you get an early glimpse of it. So a company that is just now starting to develop might get one of those early access mm-hmm. controllers. But since we already had a finished game by the time we rolled up to Steam, you know, we wouldn't have been on the list to get a first look at that puppy. I don't know what the future holds, but
yeah. let's see. What about the? I'm trying to think of some questions right now while I've got you. But as far as questions you normally wouldn't answer, so you're. I know. So well, this is a point insofar as you know gamers and things where we are so thirsty for information right now. Two brand new consoles being released. Steam makes their announcements. We've got a lot of things that we want information on. And so it's a wonderful thing to get to talk to you and to be able to ask you these questions. You may not can answer them, but if you can, it's great. But if you can't, it's completely understandable. But are there any efforts in the work. We understand that save games don't transfer between past generation and the next generation. Is there any possibility of your game showing up on the Xbox One?
So I never say never. You just can't. If something blew up and suddenly we sold 50 million copies, there would suddenly be a lot of incentive on the part of a lot of people to make that happen.
Yeah.
But this is I don't think so. I think we're going to be putting our effort into the next game in the State of Decay world more than we would try to, because there's no compatibility between the two platforms.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So the retrofitting would be a soup to nuts kind of deal. It's for a team, especially for a team our size, it's best for us to focus on the next thing. But and, you know, never say never.
Yeah, of course. And being that you're on Steam now, I'm guessing, and I don't know, were you any under any kind of exclusivity with Microsoft for a period of time?
No, not really. Okay. The original plan was that we would make this just Xbox, because, and that's for focus reasons. That wasn't for any contractual obligation. I mean, well, you're not going to see us on the PlayStation, but I mean, I hope that's common sense. Because they're our publisher,
right.
They're not just distributing us through the Xbox. Mm-hmm. Microsoft is the publisher and IP owner of State of Decay. So, but the PC, last year they were talking with us, and we were like, you know, it looks like doing it on the PC wouldn't actually be that hard. And they said, great, we should do that.
I know.
It wasn't very complicated. It was
more,
kind of awesome.
The more avenues for income that you have.
Well, there's so many more PC players. And
yeah, right.
I love my PC. Remember, I am a PC player, so I'm a little biased. But
yeah,
I was nervous coming to work. This is my first console game, so I was a little nervous. I was like, what if the console community is really different? And it turns out, actually, the console community is brilliant. I mean, genuinely amazing. My favorite anecdote from my community is a guy comes on the forum and says, oh man, I just totally got raped by that Feral. And another guy said, hey dude, you didn't get, you know, you weren't violated. You lost a couple of pixels in a video game. And the first guy goes, oh, you're right. I'll just say ganked from now on. And I'm sitting there blinking going, wait, I thought console gamers were supposed to be, you know, the downfall of Western civilization. I've never seen PC players do that.
Well, I think just as it's a case-by-case basis on who deals has good dealings with Microsoft, I think it's a game-by-game basis or case-by-case basis on game with the kind of audience that you'll run into.
Then this community is freaking amazing. It's everybody's an adult. The conversations are fun and interesting. We have our occasional, you know, dust ups and flare ups and, you know, people having a bad day. I got one guy that I can tell when he's drunk. I just ban him until he sobers up.
I'll be looking at James whenever this part airs. Not that he gets banned, but boy, he gets drunk.
Sure. Yeah, it happens when you got adults, you know. But the community has just been so, so wonderful all the way. So I was actually nervous when we launched on PC. It was like, oh no, I'm spoiled. What am I going to do? And then the PC guys turned out to be as wonderful as I remembered. And so maybe it is the game. I don't know. Maybe there's something about apocalyptic zombie simulators that make for terrific communities. I can't tell you, but I enjoy the hell out of the Steam forum and my own forum. Every player I've met has been just terrific.
Well, one of the other questions we got in from Dennis was it always the plan from the beginning to not have a designated main character in the game?
Oh yes, absolutely. The original concept was, you know, the guys were watching a horror movie and then they started talking like people do afterwards. Well, if the apocalypse broke out right now, mm-hmm. what would you do? And so the game's meant to answer that question. If you're totally If you're completely wrapped up in one character who isn't anything like you, you know, that's not terribly, that doesn't give you this the kind of feeling. We knew permadeath was part of the game from the beginning, and if you're only one character, then that guy dies and the game's over. That sucks. That's not fun. But at the same time, we wanted you to really mourn if somebody died. So we wanted you to get attached, but not to the exclusion of all the other people in the world. So that's from the beginning, there was never any intention that you would be one guy.
How big is the world?
16 square kilometers. Half of that is playable. The other half is things like mountains and forests mm-hmm. and water and stuff like that.
And are there any additions that are going to be, and this may be available on the Steam page, I don't know, but are there any additions going into the PC release that won't be on the 360, that aren't on the 360 release?
No, we are committed to, because gamers are gamers. The distinction between console gamers and PC gamers that I had in my head, and I should have known better being a professional, those distinctions are garbage. They're nonsense. Gamers are gamers are gamers. And we're committed to treating our two, you know, platforms completely equally as far as content goes. What the PC has that console does not have is much prettier graphics.
Right.
We took advantage of the PC's capability to be gooder, you know? So we made it gooder. And of course, the keyboard interface. I personally am more comfortable with keyboard interfaces rather than cycling through endless menus with my controller. That's a personal preference. Since right now you can play on Steam with a controller, mm-hmm. I am hearing from a lot of players saying, you know, I'm primarily a PC gamer, but I primarily use my controller. And I'm like, wow, all right. I'm holding out for the keyboard, but great. I'm glad you're happy.
Well, and like you said, it's been doing great there on Steam Early Access. So do you have any kind of time frame on when, I guess, it comes out of Early Access, if that's the terminology that's supposed to be used for games of that type?
Say again?
Do you have any time frame of when it'll be leaving Early Access?
No, and here's why. We were a very small team, and we had hoped to get the first pass at keyboard and mouse up sooner than we have been able to do so far. And since some of the design elements were coming from people who were responsible for getting our downloadable content pack out the door, so we kind of had a little bottleneck going on here. But we've just hired a new programmer, and he is totally kicking ass. So we're hoping to have the first pass of keyboard and mouse up very soon. If I say a date, I will jinx it.
Right. I don't want to put you in that position to say one thing.
Super soon. And then how long it takes kind of depends on the feedback. You know, the reason we didn't launch on PC with a keyboard interface is because we were serious about wanting our players' feedback from the first iteration on. Mm-hmm. Like, not, this isn't a Potemkin village. This isn't puppet theater. We are serious about putting in our customers' feedback into the interface. So we wanted to make sure that we had players before we put up the interface. It was one of those chicken or the egg problems. And it really does depend on the feedback we get and how quickly we can address it and get it in there. So it could be really, really fast. We think worst case scenario, we're definitely going to be out by the end of the year. I mean, and that's the worst.
Yeah. Well, have you, one of the other questions Dennis asks is, have you been tracking any interesting stats through Xbox Live or Steam, such as how many dishes of Marcus Chutney have been served up to the zombies? I don't get that reference, but I have held off on any kind of spoilers, but yes.
Well, Marcus is the first, when you first log into the world, you're a guy named Marcus, and you're on a fishing trip, and you know that because you're standing at a lake looking at a boat, and all of a sudden you're attacked by zombies. Mm-hmm. And you would be toast if another guy hadn't run up to help you, and that's the last time you're going to get your ass bailed out by the game. After that, you're on your own. And Marcus, because he's the first guy you play, a lot of people do get very attached to him.
Yeah, I know, and that was one of James's big responses was, he tweeted something that had to do with that, and somebody that he's pretty sure is from Undead, he's not sure who it was, he can't remember, responded back and was like, was it Marcus? And his response was, yeah, just completely, you know, taken back by that.
I am all the social media channels. See, again, small company. So, but it's pretty obvious who I am because I'm at Undead Labs mm-hmm. on Twitter. Like, it's not, there's no mystery as to who.
Well, it wasn't the Undead Labs Twitter account that responded to him. So I'm not exactly sure. So it may not have been. It may not have been anybody
it
from.
It might have been Jeff. Jeff is kind of a Twitter stalker when he's got the time.
Oh, okay.
So it's... yeah, he might have been tweeted by the president.
Oh, nice.
CEO. I forget what I call him. Executive producer. I don't know. He signs the paychecks.
That, well, he's a pretty important guy then. Yeah, but what about, have you found any interesting stats through Xbox Live or Steam? Things such as that sort of thing? Any things that are surprising or unexpected?
I'm not sure what we're tracking that I'm supposed to talk about, so I should probably err on the side of caution. See, I still have some self-preservation instinct. I'm not sure we're tracking much of that stuff. Xbox doesn't really. Xbox tracks your achievements, of course, and
yeah.
But the leaderboards were hacked early on, so they're not the most reliable way of generating data. That is probably my the saddest part for me was just how quickly people hacked into the XBLA leaderboards, and there's nothing we can do about it from our end, really. Not that wouldn't almost immediately be defeated. It's one of those things you have to start with from scratch.
Well, you guys had some issue. I'm going on memory on this and completely unprepared, so pardon the unprofessionalism, but it's just like us anyway. You guys had something going on early on release in Xbox Live Arcade that you were able to get a patch out pretty quick, if I remember right.
Oh yeah, we had our first title update rolling within a week.
Yeah.
We're mostly from an MMO background. I mean, I guess 2/3 of the company.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than half are used to MMOs where you see a problem and you fix it. You don't sit around making your players suffer for 6 months.
I think it was an issue of like, well, they have to go through certification and then they have to go through all this stuff to get that out. But you guys did it really quick.
That is us being committed to making things happen, and Microsoft, the people we were working with at Microsoft, helping us out.
Well, what are your plans for expanding the world of State of Decay?
Our first DLC is coming very soon. I should be able to announce when that'll be. Super soon. Tune into our website on Monday for a design article, and we don't usually we do those when we think the end is near. I should be able to announce whether or not we've entered certification by early next week. And certification takes a couple of weeks, give or take. Depends on what disasters they find in testing. But we've now been through multiple, multiple TUs, the original launch. They shouldn't find any disasters. We've got the process down now. So our first content pack is coming very, very soon. That's our sandbox mode. We call it Breakdown.
Uh-huh.
It's no story, just survival. You go around, you gather survivors, you build your base, you work it out, but the resources are still finite. So the deal is, when you've picked the map clean, or when you've decided this map is too easy, because we get a certain number of players saying the game's too easy. So if you've decided this map is too easy, and or you've gotten eaten all the food and shot all the guns, then you repair an RV and choose which people in your community are going to get to come with you on the RV and ride to the next valley, and who's going to be left behind to die in isolation in a barren valley with no food. I mean, we hope it's not an easy choice, but you hop onto the RV and you go to the next valley, which is actually the same map, because with our world and the base system, new maps are very, very difficult and super time consuming. And we wanted to get this out before we all died of old age.
Right. And again, small team. Yeah.
Yeah. Very small team. But the cool thing though, is that the map's repopulated, but it's harder. Every time you rinse and repeat, it gets more difficult. And of course, you can, when you start a new round of breakdown play, you can start from whatever level you thought was best suited your needs. You don't have to play through what you thought was too easy ever again. And the more kills you get, the more achievements you get, the more you unlock special characters that have cool abilities and super cool weapons. And then of course there'll be leaderboards. We've got they're a separate set from the ones we have up now. So we hope that players will be able to use these leaderboards a little bit more with and be able to trust the numbers they see. I'm trying to be real vague there.
I can tell.
But yeah, we've got separate leaderboards up. The idea is to see how long can you survive? At what level can you survive? It ought to be good for a lot of the trash talking I see in my forums, let's see what you're made of. How long can you last at level 6, guys? All right, bring it.
Now, I should have looked this up and before I asked it, but co-op, was that, that's not been a, that's, it wasn't in the 360 and I guess it's not coming to the PC, or is it something that's going to be implemented, or?
So it is not. Co-op, a lot of people say the game feels like a co-op game, and that's because originally it was. That was the plan. But we realized, summer 2012, that it simply wasn't something we could do with the engine we had. It's not co-op gameplay, not split screen. And multiplayer was also a level of complexity we weren't prepared to hit and launch in spring or summer of 2013. Mm-hmm. So we cut it and we cried and we hoped we'd be able to add it back in later. And then later came and the game was a hit. So we're like, yes, let's sit down and talk about multiplayer. And that's when we realized it was still going to take us, 9 months to a year to do it on a console that had just been announced was entering its twilight years. So
true.
Yeah, it was rough. We felt bad. Our players felt bad. It was we felt really, really terrible. But we announced that in July. The only thing we could say that was, even remotely positive about it is that we swear on a stack of game manuals that any future games set in this world are going to be built around multiplayer. Never mind, we hope to. It's going to be. 'Cause this is a multiplayer game. This is going to be brilliant.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. Wonderful to hear. Would love some co-op zombie survival. We know that exists in other types of games, but not in something that I know of, like State of Decay.
I've never seen another game do the things that we're doing.
Right, exactly.
Let alone multiplayer.
Speaking of other games, what other zombie games have you enjoyed?
Well, that's a funny story.
Well, go ahead and tell us.
No, it's an embarrassing story.
Go ahead and tell us.
No, I'm terrible with gore. I cover my face when I'm playing our game. It's really bad. I'm not good. I'm married to somebody who collects horror movies, horror, science fiction, zombie, the works. There's more than 2,000 DVDs here in my house.
Wow.
He's if you've heard of it, he owns a copy. So, when I got the interview at a zombie company, he was like, "What? This isn't fair." I personally have not played a lot of them because I'm not very good at them. The guys, however, the people who actually designed and made this game, you cannot name a game with zombies that they have not played.
Mm-hmm.
Their devotion to the genre is total. It is really, really ridiculous. And that's, if you play State of Decay, you will see Easter eggs everywhere that references any, if it has zombies in it, there is an Easter egg in our game for it. And that is not an exaggeration. The one tip I give people is look at the words and then see what they spell backwards. Like take the word you see on a shipping crate and turn it around. And that is probably a zombie reference. If there's a sign in the game, there's obvious ones like re-elect Grimes for sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
There's obvious references like that. But almost every sign in the game is also.
Speaking of, did you play Telltale's Walking Dead?
By the time it came out, I was elbow deep in stuff for this, getting this out the door. So I did not get a shot at that.
So you still haven't played it yet? Oh.
I have not.
Okay.
No.
I was going to ask your opinion on that, but I'll leave it alone. It's something you should get to, but I'll leave it alone.
I wish I had our designers with me because they'd have opinions out the wazoo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We had a nice long conversation about that back in February, I think it was. So, but yeah, it was that was an interesting take on the way you played a zombie game, I guess you could say. So, and set in a wonderful world as well. So, had a nice story that it could not really a story, but I guess a setting that it could borrow from for what it was doing. Well, I really appreciate your time. One other question that Dennis wanted to ask, and hopefully it's something that you can answer, but you may not even be able to. You guys are maybe so busy that you can't. Is there anything that you can say about the development of Class 4 at this time?
Actually, I can tell you there hasn't been so much as a single line of code because we are still in talks with Microsoft about the future. Right. But we hope to have something to announce there pretty soon as well. Yeah. Talks are ongoing thanks to the support of our community and the enthusiasm with which they spread the word. So we thank our play. If there is another game to be talking about soon, we want to thank our players for making it happen.
You guys are very community focused, and that's always great when the developers are listening to the community that they are making their game for.
They do. There's not a patch note that didn't originate with our players.
Yeah, there's a lot of companies who cannot say that. There's a lot of companies who like to say that but don't actually do it. So it's nice to know that that you guys at Undead Labs are listening to the community and trying to do what's best for them, especially in the sense that you just told us that your next, you know, the next title would be something that's focused on the multiplayer aspect of it. So,
absolutely.
Anyway,
Sonya, I have something new to say soon.
I hope you do too, and if you want to come back on the show and say it, that would be great. We'd have you guys on anytime you'd like. We really appreciate you giving us your time, so thank you so very much, Sonya.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, we'll talk to you again, I guess, when this thing comes out of early access and gets its big official here we are world.
Exactly.
Come play a situation. We'll talk to you again. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that was Sonya Weathers from Undead Labs talking about State of Decay. And yes, we will have her on again. And hopefully we will have her on when Dennis is here and James can join in the conversation there as well, because those are the two guys that have played it here on the show and probably would have a lot better questions than what I was throwing at her. But it was a pleasure to have her on, and we will have her on again. Anyway, we've got our last segment here of In-Game Chat coming up next. We will be right back. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. Ghost Bear had it right in the chat room. That is music from StarCraft II. Welcome back to the final segment of the show. Going to go around and... I mean, RJ, you haven't been with us. You missed last week.
Yeah, I was out last week.
Yeah, you were out at a convention. Did you do any tournament play while you were out there?
Yeah, we... well, I got a tournament out there for Street Fighter IV. Unfortunately, they decided to put Smash Brothers in front of it. So that thing ran long, and people were reminded what happened the last time this happened. Had like 128, 130 people sign up 1 year, and Street Fighter was supposed to start at 9 o'clock. It didn't start until like 1:30 in the morning.
Oh my God.
So I wasn't up for that one. And it happened again this year. Only had 80 folks show up this time, but like I said, people were reminded of what happened last time and started cashing out.
Mm-hmm.
But I did play in the Soul Calibur 5 tournament. Had a good little placing in that. Had fun playing with a lot of folks there from out of town, and folks I was familiar with and unfamiliar with, trying to make things up as I went along. But it was a good time overall. It was really had a good time.
Cool. Well, great. Have you been playing anything since? We talked a little bit. You've been GTA
Five. Yeah, I played a little bit of Grand Theft Auto 5, and I was in a toss up between FIFA 14 and NHL 14, just trying to play a different sports title. As opposed to baseball, which I usually play with MLB The Show. But I ended up picking NHL 14. I hadn't played a hockey game in years, but I loaded it up, played a little bit of it, and I'm having a good time with it. I brought back all those good times I had with NHL 94, 95 when I played it on the Genesis back in the day.
Yeah, I recently, just today, because again, going back to seasonal games, I fired up Costume Quest for Halloween. It opens with a pumpkin, and anytime I now see a pumpkin in a game, it always takes me back to SWAT, and I want to go play it.
See, you're doing that to me now. Now I'm thinking SWAT.
I know.
I think I need to play Bully.
Does that have a...
Yes, it begins and it at the beginning of a school term.
Oh, okay.
Of a U.S. school term in fall. So, like, the whole introductory portion to the thing kind of leads you into fall, and it was actually... really kind of excellent in its own way, and its depiction of being away at school time of year. It was really, really neat.
Yeah, I went to go fire up. I wanted to play something before we came up here, and I was like, let me check on Splinter Cell, and I clicked on my Steam thing, Splinter Cell, and it was like, it showed that you were online. It showed that you had the game and that you were online. I was
right.
Like, what is he playing? And I looked over and it was Bioshock 2.
I'm playing Bioshock 2, which I have already owned. I have owned for a while. I think anybody with $5 on Steam should probably own it because it's been on sale so many times. But what a great story about that, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
tell us that story.
Well, I mean, everybody knows that we're facing down the eventual less than a year now, July of next year, I think it is. July or June or July. I don't know. One of the
Anytime J's. James thinks he goes into song.
Right. Well, I work in theater.
That's true.
Yeah, whatever expected. Works, man. Whatever works.
So we know that Games for Windows Live is being, it's end of life, right? It's being deprecated as a service. It's not going to be there anymore. And that left an awful lot of questions in people's minds about, yeah, okay, but what about the games that are tied into that service, right? There are a lot of games that whose DRM and authentication and everything is tied into the game. How is it going to work? Because nobody whose game requires Games for Windows Live has to go back and patch it out of their game. They don't have to. They can let it rot. They can let it die. This has happened many times before. EA has done stuff like this before, mostly with their multiplayer services. Shut off the multiplayer servers, discontinue matchmaking, because there is no old-school direct IP connections for these kinds of things or third-party or dedicated servers or any of that.
It's
essentially, right. The multiplayer component of a game is essentially dead in the water. And so there's a queasy feeling in the stomachs of a lot of people who don't want to lose installation rights for their games. So kind of out of the blue, against a lot of speculation, 2K Games comes along, patches the DRM, the Games for Windows Live, and I believe Secure ROM, right out of Bioshock 2. Brilliant. Patches in native controller support, which apparently it never had. It was a troublesome port to the PC. But they patch in native controller support for everybody, which is a big boon for a lot of players, particularly given Steam's whole movement towards the living room and the fact that Bioshock is perfectly playable on a controller. It's not that kind of FPS. Renews or restores Minerva's Den to the Steam marketplace. And Minerva's Den was it was DLC that required Bioshock 2. And we can talk at length at some other time about Bioshock 2 and how it was actually much greater than people gave it credit for. Certainly in terms of gameplay, it was leaps and bounds beyond the first game. Its narrative was slightly weak, but it was an improvement in a lot of ways. And Minerva's Den does not require you to have played the story of 2. Requires you to have the game, but it is its own story and is regarded by many people to be, honestly, no kidding, one of the greatest pieces of story-based DLC released ever.
Yeah.
And it has been unavailable in the PC space except through the Games for Windows Live store for a really long time. It's kind of been out of reach for people that didn't want to go through that service, and I believe there were certain restrictions that kept people from getting it at all or using it at all. So they restore it to the Steam store as well. And then, do you happen to already own Bioshock 2 from one of the 500 sales? Here's Minerva's Den for free. Like, I'm not saying that this is like, that they're amazing people for doing this. You could argue that this is just what we should be getting all the time. Reality is it isn't what we get all the time. This is an old title. It probably doesn't generate an awful lot of money for them. They probably moves in sales, but it's been practically given away at several different junctures. So to see them essentially come back to this old thing and just do right by it in every meaningful way, it was really kind of inspiring. I think they earned a lot of goodwill. I'm going to have to find something of theirs I don't already own and buy it just as a, all right, I appreciate the gesture. Let me return it in hopes that other companies between now and next year behave in a similar manner when they're decoupling Games for Windows Live.
You will have that DLC for Burial at Sea for Bioshock Infinite,
which looks fantastic. It looks certainly very, very
which
good.
Which I'm not so certain that they didn't do what they did for Bioshock 2 for a possible package deal with the release of Burial at Sea being Burial at Sea is a two-parter DLC, each part being $15. So $30 total for this. Mm-hmm. I could easily see them saying pre-purchase the DLC, get BioShock 1, BioShock 2, and the DLC,
right.
Minerva's Den, for free. I could easily see them making some kind of
package
deal.
That would be easy. And they're both, they've all been so cheap. And I think that if you don't already own BioShock 2, you have to purchase Minerva's Den separately. I'm not...
You do. Because
okay,
I do not own BioShock 2.
Okay.
On the PC.
But if you have
surprised
already,
by.
Right. But if you have already owned it,
mm-hmm.
Minerva's Den is just yours.
Yeah.
So that was very good for them. And it is the model of how things should be approached when you're going through, when you're looking at such a weird system, like where an online component begins to rot and it's cut off and moved away. There have always been questions since we moved into the online space, console stuff and PC stuff alike.
Yeah.
That, isn't there going to be trouble when this thing dies or that thing dies or they move in different directions? Well, yes, there could be. But this is exactly how you should behave. It is the model for how a person should behave. Good on them. You know?
Definitely. Definitely.
So, yeah, I never got a chance to finish that all the way through. I played it a little bit on the console and then bought it on the PC when it was on sale. So I'm going to go through the entire game again and play Minerva's Den and have a good time of that, hopefully. But it was really excellent for them to have done that.
Yeah, going in, hitting up an email real quick. Daniel Phelps has a lot that he wrote to us about, and we're basically taking every episode and hitting one or two of his emails because we just haven't gotten to emails very much. But Daniel wrote into us about PAX and says, PAX is mostly about the people and not as much about the games, as much as media might lead you to believe otherwise. What was your most memorable moment at PAX this year, and more importantly, why? Obviously asking me this, he says, it doesn't have to be game-related. I'm asking you about your time with a group of gamers, not just your time as a gamer. I ask because you live in Alabama. I live in Arkansas. To many people, video games are still children's toys in places like these. I would like to hear you talk about what it's like for a group of adult gamers to get together and have fun. Also, a personal request, you guys should co-op something and talk about it soon. Halo, Borderlands, Saints Row, don't care, but it's fun to hear you guys ping-pong through games that you've played together. Yeah, we should play something together. We keep talking about this.
There's a lot of options.
There is, and we just never do it. I guess Halo 4 is one that we should probably try out, and Takedown being another, and I don't know, looking at SWAT or something.
If you can do Borderlands 2, I can do that one on
the
PS3.
On the
PS3, of course.
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah. So, yeah, we should do that. As far as your question about what was the most memorable moment at PAX this year, more importantly, I don't necessarily know that I have a memorable moment from PAX this year. A lot of the guys from COG, he is exactly right. PAX is more about the people than it is about the games. There were a lot of people from COG who didn't get to go, and PAX is turning more into a stroke of luck to get tickets to get to the thing because tickets sell out in minutes now. The big four-day passes sell out in minutes. Most people want those. Most people want to go every single day of the convention and really don't see any reason of going a day here, skip a day, go back a day, that sort of thing. Getting tickets is very difficult to go to the Penny Arcade Expo. It's in Seattle. And last year, we had a good group from Colony of Gamers able to make it. I believe it was last year. There's a picture from either last year or the year before last, where you can see exactly how many people from COG went. We all had T-shirts made. There was a day when it was almost the last day of the convention. We were out in the lobby of the convention center. Tycho walks by and sees a group of all these red shirts, which is the color that we had. They were all maroon. And said, hey, can we grab a picture? He stops. I don't know who he was talking to. He just stops right there. He's like, I got to go for a second, and walks right over to where we were. And we had this huge picture taken. There's about... God, I don't know, 30 of us just there. And that's a memorable moment from all of us just being there and doing that. Going out to dinner and going to a bar, stuff like that. Huge memorable moments, not so much about the games. It's always been that way. So I can't really pick one from this past year because it was so scattered with the people I knew who were there. So I can't really pick a moment that kind of sticks out. But that would be my most memorable moment, is having a big group of people. I know he says gamers, but and that's great. There's a ton of gamers there, but you still feel kind of by yourself if you don't know any of them. There's a common thread between you as enjoying the games, but without having people that you know there, it doesn't stick out as much. So that's one of the enjoyable things from mine, from my PAX visit from this past year. So, yeah, Ghost Bear says Marcella's. Went back to Marcella's this year. It's a restaurant that we've gone 2 years previous with a big group. They shut down the place for us and just serve us. And went back this year. They did not shut it down because we didn't call in advance, and there were only like four of us that went. But he remembered us, and it was a lot of fun. But it's nice to have those places and have those moments and times that you get. So PAX was a lot of fun. Hopefully more people can go next year if they decide to go. I know attending PAX has kind of become a thing.
Yeah.
If you're going to go or not based on if you support them or don't support them, you make your own decision on that, but go for the games or go for the people, whatever. If you get your group together, then so be it. Hopefully we'll get James to go to E3 this year, though, coming up in June to go to E3. That'd be the first time that you'd have gone.
I went
me.
Just a couple years ago,
it's
right?
What you
right.
Think,
it was
huh?
just recent. Yeah, like I always feel like it's been a few years, but it hasn't been all that much, right? 99. That's just like this is like 5 or 6 years ago, right?
The older you get, the shorter the gap between the last thing you did something.
That just happened. I swear, it just happened.
Yeah, and then you find out
two decades ago,
Fight Club's 20 years old, and you're like, what? No, I saw that three
right,
years
right,
ago.
Right.
No. What was it, 16 years?
Didn't
you
I
say?
Just do that before my nap?
15 years?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it was about the same time, actually. Yeah. Well, no, the last one I went to was in L.A., but it's back when they were swapping yearly, East Coast, West Coast.
But you didn't go to L.A., did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? I didn't know that.
99 was in L.A.
Oh, okay.
It was the permanent move to L.A. was one of the reasons that I became less interested. It's a long trip. From here, I don't like Los Angeles. I don't like it.
I don't blame you, and I don't either.
There are many more. I understand it's accessible for a lot of people. It's not a favorite of mine. That's neither here nor there.
And really honestly, matter. They should. There's people who go to the LA one and say, you know what, they need to move it out of LA anyway.
Yeah, I don't think Atlanta was a good venue either.
Right.
It was just convenient for me. I believe that there are many other places that would be better. Personally, think Vegas would be fantastic.
I would love it for being in Vegas, yeah.
But, I mean, Vegas is I believe those volumes and the accessibility of hotels and convention centers and display areas and everything are much denser and pretty much more.
That's the big complaint is it's just too compact. It's just too bunched in and crowded.
If
they moved it to, like Ghost Bear suggests, San Diego, that's another great one.
Mm-hmm.
You can fit all of
E3. San Diego's a good convention.
You can
city.
Fit all of E3 that fits into the LA Convention Center. You can fit into like one segment of the San Diego Convention Center.
Mm-hmm.
So, to be able to have much more space and to kind of move around in would be nice. But
I know that a majority of the studios and presenters and stuff there just don't want to do anything beyond make a day trip.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand it. It doesn't matter. San Diego is still across the country from me. Seattle is still across the country from me. So is Vegas. I mean, the U.S. is a big place. And, you know, pretty much anywhere other than like Nashville or Atlanta is across the country from me. So it's a hassle either way. It doesn't really matter. They're fun to go to. I've always felt that way.
So what have we got this week? Just Beyond Two
Beyond
Souls?
Beyond Two Souls.
Basically.
That's the only thing the next week is going to be about for me. I mean, I'm done with GTA. I may take another look at it when it finally shows up on the PC, but it held my interest not at all.
Mm-hmm.
I played it out of obligation and didn't get very far.
With the exception of GTA 3, this was the first GTA game I've completed.
Well, good for you, I guess, sort of.
I
somehow.
Never finished 4. I never played San Andreas.
Ah.
San
Andreas came out at a rough time. It was weird. And the other big ones came out.
I may have finished. I think I finished Vice City. I think I may have finished Vice City, but that was it.
Yeah, that's done. I'm okay with the Battlefield beta.
I need to try that. Yeah.
I would like you to try it just to compare specs. I mean, I've got high mid-range specs, an i5-2500K and a 7950 AMD card, and it's running the beta great. I mean, like, legitimately great. A mix of high and ultra or all ultra at like 50 frames. So I'm happy with that. I know that I want to play the game. I'm going to put that aside, not play it anymore. So I'm fine with that. It's mm-hmm. sitting off over there. No interest because I know I'm going to play it later. Beyond Two Souls. Are you going to play that?
I haven't had any interest in it. I'll probably, if I can get a rental, I'll probably check it out.
Yeah, Redbox is going to carry it.
Yeah,
just
Redbox
FYI.
Is likely, yeah.
Did you do Heavy Rain? Did you do Heavy Rain?
Yeah, I got Heavy Rain. I played
okay.
that. Played
okay.
That, yeah.
I mean, it's just,
same
you know,
folks. Yeah,
yeah, so, yeah. same folks and everything, which should turn me off.
Well, that's
because
what,
I no. absolutely just had a – I just gagged.
Just read the chat room, the last line in the chat room, and then you can find out what
yeah,
I'm looking
James
at.
James playing a new David Cage game will be interesting. He is the common point between that game and this, obviously, mm-hmm. but they have clearly taken a direction to involve this is very much counter to what I say a lot of times. The involvement of A-list actors in this stands to alleviate at least some of my concerns that Heavy Rain had. Scripting, line delivery, dialogue, dialect, all of those things. There are things about it I didn't like in Heavy Rain. We'll just see that if hopefully David Cage can elevate his narrative to be worthy of these people.
Yeah.
I don't know. Either way, it'll be a laugh if it's not good.
And we will definitely be talking about that in the weekends to come. So thanks, everybody, for joining us in the chat room, as well as everybody listening on the stream or even on their radios as well. Thank you to everybody who grabs us every week from iTunes or however you get our show for later use. We really appreciate that. Join us on Twitter, Facebook, our forums at ColonyOfGamers.com. Subscribe to us on Twitch and to our YouTube channel, where you can watch everything you just saw here if you watched it on Twitch over again, if you're that mean to yourself. So anyway, thank you very much. Don't forget, we got a Steam group on Steam. So somebody made a suggestion of us posting stream stuff on our Steam group. Sometimes those things happen on a whim of just like, I'll stream this. I mean, I've got my Pinball Sundays that I do, but I never know what time on Sunday I'm going
to
be doing those.
We really honestly aim to be less whimsical about those.
Yeah, we do. And we need to.
One of these days.
We'll try and tighten that up for you. So anyway, thanks, everybody. And we will see you next Saturday. Good night.